Radio Prague News.
Police arrested 17 people at demonstrations of right-wing extremist groups on Thursday's national holiday. Five paintings by the early Cubist painter Emil Fila have been stolen from the Perutz Chateau in northern Bohemia. And smog conditions have improved slightly, though pollution levels continue to exceed permissible limits. Police arrested 17 people at demonstrations of right-wing extremist groups on Thursday's national holiday. 10 people out of a group of about 50 were detained after a demonstration of the Workers' Party for Social Justice, the successor of the banned Neo-Nazi Workers' Party, when they attempted to cross the river where an opposing demonstration was taking place and were deterred by police. A group of young people then began throwing fireworks at officers. 7 other people were arrested during the demonstration itself for possession of fireworks. No problems were reported at the day's main protests, a demonstration of some 2,000 people against the current center-right government and its reform plans. November 17th marked 22 years since the beginning of the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia, which brought down the country's communist regime. 5 paintings by the early Cubist painter Emil Fila were stolen from the Perutz Chateau in northern Bohemia, apparently on Thursday night. Police put the value of the reportedly uninsured paintings at tens of millions of crowns, but have declined to provide any specific information as an investigation is underway. The chateau, where the Czech avant-garde artist lived after World War II, was sold 5 years ago along with its gallery to British buyers, who the local mayor says provided good security. The work of Emil Fila is among the most expensive auctioned in the Czech Republic, with one painting sold last year for over 16 million crowns. Smog conditions in the Czech Republic have improved slightly over the last 2 days, though pollution levels continue to exceed permissible limits, namely in the regions of Moravia Silesia and southern Moravia. Dust levels in the worst affected areas, previously 4 times the permissible norm of 50 micrograms per cubic meter, fell to around 87 on Thursday. The situation has lasted more than 2 weeks in some parts of the country, with traffic and industrial manufacturing restricted, and children and the elderly advised to stay indoors as much as possible. The last of 38 mummies has been returned to a famous crypt in the town of Klatovy, more than half a year since renovation of the premises, located beneath a former Jesuit church, began. The well-preserved remains are a major historical attraction, and the site is due to reopen in several days. The bodies of individuals from the 17th century were preserved through natural ventilation in the catacombs. They can now be viewed in glass caskets. In all, the famous site was closed to locals and visitors for a year and a half. Now turning briefly to the weather. Conditions over the coming days are expected to be partly cloudy, with daytime highs between 3 and 7 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, we look at how Czechs mark the anniversary of the Velvet Revolution that brought down the communist regime 22 years ago. That will be followed by the latest roundup of business news and communism not in the dust heap of history but recalled in the museum. That's in today's special. Don't go away. On Thursday, November the 17th, the Czech Republic marked 22 years since the start of the Velvet Revolution, as well as the 72nd anniversary of the events of November 1939, which resulted in the closure of all Czech universities by the Nazis and reprisals against students and intellectuals. But many Czechs use the holiday, officially called the Day of Fighting for Freedom and Democracy, to voice their discontent with the current government policies. Pavla Horáková has more.
While officials laid wreaths on Prague's Národní street, where communist riot police brutally suppressed a peaceful student demonstration on November the 17th, 1989, hundreds of people gathered on the Old Town Square to protest against the state of affairs in the country 22 years after the fall of communism. After a symbolic funeral of democracy and the crushed hopes of the Velvet Revolution, the protesters marched to Wenceslas Square to join another demonstration and listened to speeches given, among others, by the Slovenian left-wing philosopher Slavoj Žižek.
You were on the streets for solidarity and freedom. What you got is freedom without solidarity, freedom of corrupted capitalism.
Corruption was high on the list of complaints of the protesters, along with existential fears caused by the government's austerity measures. In Prague and other big cities, many called on the coalition government of Prime Minister Petr Nečas to step down. Despite the ever more vocal discontent, the Prime Minister remains optimistic about the post-communist transformation process.
I am convinced that the change was right and that in the end, despite all the problems, the past 20 years have been successful.
Even though the opposition Social Democrats are among the most vociferous opponents of the policies implemented by the centre-right government, party head Bohuslav Sobotka agrees the fall of communism was a change for the better.
There has been a marked positive shift, even though many people are rightfully disappointed by the economic inequality that has been growing lately.
The capital Prague also saw a demonstration by far-right radicals and their opponents. Several hundred police monitored the situation to prevent potential clashes. According to a poll commissioned by Czech television on the occasion of the anniversary of the Velvet Revolution, two-thirds of Czechs believe politicians today are more corrupt than their predecessors before 1989. Also, only a third of respondents said life today was better than under communism. The country's president, Václav Klaus, dismisses that view.
In principle, the situation has turned out well. Of course, we have 1,000 reasons to be dissatisfied with various details, but those are our own particular problems and responsibilities. But our task was not to guarantee happiness and wealth for everybody. Our task was to change the political, economic, and social system from communism to something completely different, and we succeeded in that 100%.
Markedly absent from this year's commemorations was the protagonist of November 1989 and later the country's president, Václav Havel. Upon his doctor's recommendation, he spent the day in his country home in northeast Bohemia, where he has been recovering from a recent bout of respiratory problems.
Pavla Horáková reporting there on the 22nd anniversary of the start of the Velvet Revolution that brought down the communist regime in Czechoslovakia. Now, if you'd like to comment on that or anything else that you hear in today's program, don't forget it's easy to write to us here at the station. The address is english@radio.cz. Now, though, it's time for this week's business news, and for that, I'm joined by Jan Richter in the studio.
Czech GDP growth slowed down to an annual 1.5% in the third quarter of this year, according to preliminary figures by the Czech Statistical Office released this week. Compared to the previous quarter, the economy contracted by 0.7%, and the outlook for the rest of 2011 and 2012 is even bleaker. On Friday, the OECD predicted 1.6% growth for the Czech economy next year, down by 0.5% from their previous estimate. But that's still optimistic compared to the Czech National Bank's estimate of 1.2% and very cautious forecast by the country's finance ministry, which said a 1.0% growth next year would be a success. How things develop, however, will very much depend on Germany, where the vast majority of Czech exports are destined.
The volatile Czech currency has lost its appeal for investors looking for a safe haven, according to a report by the Financial Times, which noticed the crown's 2.5% fall against the euro over a period of 5 days. Along with other currencies of Central and Eastern Europe, the crown took a severe beating due to actions of neighboring central banks, the paper says. Until recently, investors were borrowing in the relatively low-yielding crown to invest in other currencies. But then the Polish and Hungarian central banks defended their currencies and made the crown much less attractive. The Czech Republic, however, is expected to keep its currency weak mainly because of the importance of exports to the country.
Since the start of the Greek and later the Eurozone debt crisis, Czech banks have been considered to be in healthy conditions, particularly in comparison with some of the banks in Western Europe. But it turns out that some banks in the Czech Republic lost billions in Greek state bonds as well. Komerční banka had to write off Greek bonds worth more than 4 billion crowns, while the ČSOB and UniCredit banks lost each over 2 billion. While this has had no serious impact on the bank's overall condition, analysts warn that should the crisis also fully hit Italy, the situation is likely to get worse. Komerční banka holds Italian bonds worth another 8.3 billion crowns, and CSOB would lose 1.8 billion crowns.
President Václav Klaus on Friday vetoed a bill introducing criminal liability for firms. The Czech center-right government considers the bill an important tool in curbing corruption. But Mr. Klaus said the legislation ignores the link between crime and its perpetrators and is an example of shirking responsibility, adding that the bill was part of a fashionable trend to criminalize corporations. Justice Minister Jiří Pospíšil rejected Mr. Klaus's claims and said he hoped coalition MPs will overturn the presidential veto when the bill returns to Parliament. The Czech Republic is the only EU member state without such legislation.
Czech firms are finding it harder and harder to keep their customers, and the country has seen a boom in all kinds of loyalty programs, according to a survey by the Retail Adventures Agency released this week. Rewards such as mobile phone credits, short trips abroad, and various kitchen appliances have been mostly offered by banks and other financial institutions, but these are increasingly joined by gas stations, clothes makers, and supermarkets. The agency said that this year, 20% more firms have expressed interest in introducing loyalty programs for their clients, while an 80% surge has been recorded compared to the period before the financial crisis.
Business news there with Jan Richter, and you'll find more of that same time, same place next week. Also, if you'd like to look up more stories and our features at our website, that, of course, is easy to do if you have internet access. The address to visit is radio.cz. Now, though, we move on to today's final feature, which is a visit to the Museum of Communism here in the Czech capital. Daniela Lazarová will be talking to its founder.
On Prague's Napřikopje Street, in the very heart of the city, right next to McDonald's, is a museum of communism. What comes as a surprise to many locals and foreign visitors is that this private venture is the work of an American businessman who owns a number of bars and restaurants in the Czech capital. Glenn Spicker came to Prague 17 years ago on a wave of interest in the post-communist world. Unlike others, he launched a successful business venture and stayed. As Glenn gave me a tour of the museum, he explained what made him branch out so far from his field of enterprise.
Well, it's not that completely far off of what I do. I did start out in restaurant business here in Czech Republic, but I studied... Soviet studies, foreign policy, communist foreign politics and things like that before the revolution. And so it was an exciting time period for me, which is why I actually moved here. And I heard about revolutions in Eastern Europe and I wanted to travel and see things. So I got here, started to do business. And it was only some years later that I realized a lot of people didn't get the experience that I got, which was to be welcomed by Czech families, to be spoken to about the communist era, to go to people's cottages, to have lunch with them, to really open up and hear about things in the past. That kind of era ended. That experience that I got, a lot of people didn't get, but yet they're still interested in what happened here, what did it look like. A lot of people would always ask me, what was it like before, what did it look like, what's changed. So I decided that it would be an interesting venture to start a museum of communism. I just really liked the idea of it. I thought it was a good idea, kind of a fun project that would help, tourists and people get a sort of quick, fairly objective overview of what happened here.
So can we walk around and see how the museum is divided up into sections and why you chose particular exhibits?
Okay, well, sure. Well, Jan Kaplan, who is a dramaturg and lives in London, emigrated in, I think, 68. He was one of the people most responsible for sort of coming up with this three-act play, this trilogy. And so we decided to have the museum sort of three-dimensional, not so chronological, not extremely boring, hopefully, and lay it out where it was the dream, the reality, and the nightmare, because the Czech and Slovaks did vote it in, communism was voted in after defeating fascism. communism probably looked like a great alternative. It was only that it was hijacked and that it may not be a realistic system of government. Obviously, it doesn't really work. But people didn't know that then, and Czechs may not want to face that or realize that, but that was the case after World War II. So that was the dream.
So what's in the dream section?
Well, the dream section is sort of like the 50s and, you know, five-year plans and the factory and everyone's working together for the betterment of mankind and, you know, it's going to be a great future and, you know, we're going to work for everyone, not just for ourselves. So it's a kind of a belief in the ideology. But anyway, let me just explain that here's sort of the ante room. This is sort of the historical backdrop. So you start in the 20s, you know, and you see how the rise of communism, what happened. So you know, from Masaryk through Hitler and World War II, and that gives you a little bit of a basis for what's going to happen after World War II. And in here, Dobrine, and in here, besides posters and a painting of the Aurora, we have a little section on Marxism and Leninism, something about Marx, something about Lenin, you know, just to give a background. And then, of course, on the left-hand side is the rise of communism here in Czechoslovakia. So Gottwald, what else? Everything, basically, you know, posters, and then this type of thing. Then we get into the segment of the dream, which is, you know, praising the industry, the Air Force, you know, technology, building, working, the schools, the ideology in the schools, plus a little section on socialist realist art. And so this was supposed to be sort of the dream, and that's why we have the hammer and sickle painted in gold, and this should be sort of a celebration of what people maybe thought was gonna happen. But then we get into the reality, and this room is gray, you know, the muddy gray hammer and sickle, and we have a little section on sport, because I think that was and always is a big diversion for people from politics, and it's a big part of people's life, and, you know, in a way to sort of avoid politics. But we have also the agricultural section. We have an empty storefront, and we discuss how people had to wait in line, and there were very few goods in the shop. And then there's the Tuzek shops as opposed to the regular shops, and the poltufki, under the table type stuff. So this section is, you know, just about what it was like, this kind of abandoned, non-functioning telephone booth, the street signs, you know, named after Lenin and Gottwald, and all this type of stuff. And we have a nice series of black and white photos of what the streets looked like, where, you know, garbage and just empty shops and buildings left broken down, or people fixing their old Trabant cars, you know. And then we even have some pictures of stuff that hasn't changed very much at all, like Ustina Labem or Dechin or some of those places. But, yeah, again, this is the destruction sort of the environment, which is unfortunately a byproduct of the regime. Then we also have Lidoví Milice, the people's militia. Then we have a little section here, more kind of propaganda, anti-imperialist posters, anti-imperialist paintings. This is an actual original Hofmeister, you know, the evil Rockefeller capitalist here, depicted in this cartoon.
So what section is this now?
This is still sort of the reality, you know, but we sneak in a socialist realist art exhibition. So a few oil paintings, you know. Then we have sort of a border section. People can see what it looked like in the border. Army.
Medals.
Guns, medals. Some
guns.
The partisans, you know, the Russians and the Czechs. And almost, even a kind of an interesting STB oil painting here. And, you know, glorifying the army and the borders and protecting the country. So some really, I think, interesting stuff. And then this is
an interrogation room.
Yeah, this is the interrogation room. So here, kind of, we painted it red, and we have Stalin's famous slogan: "One death is a tragedy; 1 million deaths is a statistic." And, you know, for us, although we're not going chronologically, we're going back to the 50s now, when, you know, dissent, political opinion, and, you know, opening your mouth against the regime was tortured. Ministry of Interior, torture, death. You know, that changed under normalization. But we felt that, you know, with Mr. Kaplan, we felt that this was pretty much the nightmare time. So we dropped back into the 50s, how people spied on you with cameras, how people had listening devices. So we're in the interrogation room, you know, the Kachlikarna, basically. You can see the tiles on the floor, and we made it dark and eerie, and we were fortunate to have some original artifacts from punk rocks, which were on loan to us, you know, a noose and a prisoner's outfit and a little bowl for lunch that they had for political prisoners. Plus a whole section on the SDB and the show trials.
Table lamp.
Yeah,
the table lamp. Old typewriter.
The old leather jacket, the table lamp, and the phone rings when you're least expecting it. This is kind of an interesting room.
And Stalin and Gottwald on the walls.
Sure, yeah.
And there seems to be a mini theater next door.
Yeah, then we have the theater, which is probably the most important part of the museum and something that everybody should see. It shows sort of the suppression of the revolution. It's great. You know, there's some stuff in 68, and then this is 89, like you can see this section. And it's fascinating, you know. It's fascinating. It's just amazing. It shows the police marching, you know, against people. We have those helmets and uniforms here and everything. So that's something I think people need to come and see. This is, this is kind of sad. Anyway, let's move on. Great music, too. So we are looking for more positive footage of the revolution, which we'd like to show in the 1989 section, which we're getting to right now. Now we're going through the normalization period. First, a little small exhibit on 1968, which doesn't do justice to what happened here, but we're a bit limited on space. And then we go through the normalization period, you know, Husak and everything. And there's some pretty funny photos. I don't know where I found these, but you see Husak with Mugabe, you see Husak with Khomeini, you also see Havel, you know, with plastic people, you know, and you kind of get a feel for what was going on then. We also need some Charter 77 documents, if anybody has, or some Samizdat publications. But again, you're limited here to about 10 square meters of space. And then we go into Gorbachev and the Berlin Wall and All Radio Free Europe and the revolution on Wenceslas Square. And you can see some of the photos of Wenceslas Square, whatever, 300,000 people. I don't know how many they said were. It's just amazing, you know?
So you want the exhibition to end on a positive note for people?
That would be the idea, which is why I think we want to redo this section and get some better footage and some color and some music and make people feel a little more emotionally upbeat when they actually leave here. You see the wall being broken down. That's just symbolic, obviously. The Berlin Wall wasn't in Prague, but that's sort of the idea. And then the museum finishes there.
So what kind of people come to see it, and what response have you had to it? I mean, is it foreigners? Is it Czechs?
It's mostly foreigners, but that's the whole range of foreigners, you know, from young Spanish or Brazilian students to Americans in their 50s, Canadians, Germans. You know, we have it in many different languages. The text is in English, Czech, and German, but you can ask for the text in Japanese or, you know, any number of languages, Italian, etc. You just have to ask for it. So, you know, I'd say by no means do we have a lot of Czech people. We have students come, and we have, you know, groups of students of, you know, from about 7, 8 years old up to about 13, you know, 14 that come every year. So we encourage people to come, and we have a comment book. And
what kind of reactions have you had in your comment book, for instance? Anything that pleased you in particular, or, you know, upset you? Or,
man, I think most people actually like it. Most people write pretty positively in the comment book. Occasionally people will say, oh, well, you know, capitalism is no better and it's worse, and, you know, or they'll hear that I'm an American and they'll write, what do you know? Ronald Reagan was terrible. I absolutely agree. I don't disagree with that. I just don't have a museum of capitalism. If I did, I would slander capitalism almost as much as I would communism. But, you know, we can only do so much here. So it's not even a look at China or even Poland. You know, this is Czech and Slovak with an emphasis on Prague for people that are coming here. So, but most people write nice comments, get something out of it, enjoy the experience. And I think even Czechs, I think when they come, they don't want to come. They'll say, we know everything. We don't want to hear about it. Leave me alone. I can't believe it. But if they actually come here, they get a lot out of it. They like it because they do see the old motorcycle that they had, or the first, you know, bike that their parents bought them, or the school, which is an exact replica of where they actually sat when they were kids. So they'll get more nostalgia and more emotional value out of it than an American who none of this stuff really speaks to them.
That was Glenn Spicker, an American living here in the Czech capital and the founder of Prague's Museum of Communism. Of course, we've just marked the 22nd anniversary of the fall of communism in this country. If you remember those heady days of 1989, wherever you were, and you'd like to comment, please do write to us here at the station. We'd love to hear your opinions and your memories from that turbulent time. Write to english@radio.cz, or you can send a letter, an old-fashioned letter, to our street address, which is Radio Prague, 12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic. And as always, some of your comments may even make it onto the air. Also, once again, if you'd like to check out our extensive archive on Czech culture, art, science, and many, many other topics, do so by visiting our website, www.radio.cz. I'm Jan Wellinger. For all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care.